much around me that day, if I didn't include the time while Samuel was fixing his hands, and if the only words that counted were the ones that got movies an R rating. I wondered if it was coincidental, if he was trying to improve himself, or if I hadn't spent enough time with him. Mary Jo's lip curled. Suck up.
You have some nerve throwing stones, he told her, when you just sat there and watched them set fire to Mercy's house.
What? Said Daryl in a very, very soft voice. But Mary Jo wasn't listening to Daryl. Instead, she half rose to her feet and leaned on the table, threatening Ben.
So what? You think I should have taken on a bunch of unknown fae for her?
Aurelie stood up and gave the table a hard shove, pinning Mary Jo against the wall behind her with a bang that must have hurt. If someone didn't know her very well, I suppose it might be possible to underestimate Aurelie. She was delicately built, as some Hispanic women are, and looked as though she'd never gotten her beautifully manicured hands dirty. Most of the pack would rather have Daryl mad at them than Aurelie. Daryl's mate's voice was frozen as she asked,
You just watched a bunch of fae burn down the house of a pack member?
I picked my cocoa off the table when it moved and managed to save Jesse's, too. With my hip, I altered the trajectory of the table just enough to make certain that it didn't hit Jesse. Daryl caught Ben's cup. He'd finished his own. So it was only Mary Jo's and Aurelie's cocoa that spilled across the table and down on the floor. In the tense silence of that moment, the interruption of my ringing phone seemed decidedly welcome. I thumped the two mugs I held down onto the table and pulled the phone out of my pocket. I didn't recognize either the number or the area code. Usually I recognize the number of people who call me in the middle of the night. Hello?
Mercedes Thompson, you have something that belongs to me. I have something that belongs to you. Shall we play?
I hit the speaker button and set the phone in the middle of the table. Of course, everyone except for Jesse could have overheard the call anyway. But with all of us listening full volume, maybe someone would hear something different. My cell was relatively new, and I'd paid extra to get one with good sound quality. Daryl pulled out his phone, one of those miniature computers with every gadget known to man, hit the screen a couple of times, and set it next to mine.
Recording, he mouthed.
Everything I have went up in flames last night, I told my unknown caller. And after I said it, the truth of that hit me again. Poor Medea. I set my jaw with determination that this person, who sounded female to me, though a female with a deep smoker's voice, would never hear the pain she'd caused me, assuming that this was one of the fae who set the fire.
It wasn't there, she said,
and I was growing more confident it was a she. Her next words made me certain that she was one of the fae, too.
It would have revealed itself in fire or in death. We watched it burn, watched the fire eat your life. And what you took from Phineas Brewster wasn't in the coals or in the ashes.
Fae often say things that sound odd to human ears. I found myself spouting Z sayings and having people stop to look at me. In fire or in death, I said, repeating the phrase that had sounded like a quote of some kind.
It reveals itself when the one who holds it dies or if it burns, she clarified impatiently.
Your bounty hunter seemed like the kind of man who gets things done, I said. Why didn't you have him kill me instead of relying on backup? Growing up with werewolves has taught me several ways of controlling the situation without being too aggressive. Asking a question a little off topic is one way of doing it. And if the question is hidden as another question, my chances of getting information are even better.
Kelly, she said, her voice incredulous.
But she knew who I was talking about. She must be the fae who'd created the incident that had almost gotten Maya hurt.
Kelly would never hurt a woman, but the police wouldn't have believed it.
There was a tone to the woman's voice that told me she knew Kelly Hart personally, and felt a veiled contempt for something in him that she thought was a weakness. I take it I am speaking to the one who calls herself Daphne Rondo? I'd remembered the missing producer's name because she shared the first with Scooby-Doo's token cute girl, and it had caught my attention. I phrased the question carefully, because the Fae cannot lie. Probably wasn't her real name. Mostly the Fae don't give their true names to anyone. Sometimes, she said. But she didn't like it that I'd figured her out. She could have refused to answer, of course, but that would have been as good as an answer anyway. A Fay who wasn't Kelly Hart's missing producer would take great pleasure in informing me I was mistaken. Mr. Hart is worried about you, I told her, and then could have bitten my tongue. This woman did not deserve to know about his concern. She'd sent him here to die. If Adam had believed that Kelly had killed me, he would have personally seen to Hart's death. Anyone who knew I was dating the local alpha would understand that much. It was why she had contrived to set the bounty hunter up. He'd feel differently if he knew what you planned for him.
If he knew what I was after, he would support me with his whole heart, she said with sudden passion that told me she had her doubts, and they bothered her. He is my soldier, and he follows my orders.
I'd heard that kind of talk before, and felt my lips curl in anger, on behalf of a stranger who'd mainly just ticked me off, but mostly for a friend of mine, Stefan, another soldier who'd been used too hard and had finally broken. You are overburdened with self-importance, I told her, but that is a common condition with the Fey. I was tired, and it was hard to keep the fine line that kept her from taking the upper hand without enraging her. Who did she have? Stefan? I hadn't seen the vampire for weeks. Z? I hadn't called him as I'd planned to before my house burned down.
You are overburdened with stupidity, she replied with icy contempt.
I pricked her about Kelly. Not that she'd hurt him, but that he might not do her bidding if he'd known what she wanted.
But that is a common problem with humans, especially humans who involve themselves in matters that are none of their business.
There was a pause as if she was weighing some matter. Then she said,
You would be wise not to irk me when I hold something you value.
There were two distinct sounds right as she finished. The first was something striking flesh, the second a muffled cry. We all stilled, listening for a hint of identity.
Male,
mouthed Daryl. I nodded. I'd caught that as well. The cry was followed by a third sound. Someone who was gagged, trying to talk. He was furious. There was something about the sound. Not Stefan, not Z. Mary Jo caught my shoulder. Her face was pale and pinched.
Gabriel,
she mouthed.
That was it.
Mary Jo had spent some time doing guard mercy at work duty this summer, working with me and Gabriel. She knew him, too. I hadn't been listening for Gabriel, because I thought he was safe. I closed my eyes in momentary despair. Stefan was a vampire. Z was a Fey other Fey gave a good deal of respectful space to. Gabriel was a 17-year-old with no supernatural powers. He didn't stand a chance against one of the Fey. Jessie made a little sound, then jerked her hands to her mouth, but the Fey on the other end caught the noise.
Angry child, she asked. She thought she'd heard me. Do you know who we caught? I'll give you a hint. He was stealing a car from you. We almost disposed of him, but he belongs to you, doesn't he? We decided to bring him along and see if you would play the game.
Gabriel is welcome to drive anything I own, I told her in clear tones, and hoped that even Gabriel's human ears could hear me. The Grey Lords are not going to be happy that you brought a human into Fey matters. She laughed. Her laughter caught me completely by surprise. Any woman with a voice as deep as hers usually has a complimentary laugh, but hers was delicate and light, completely inhuman, like silver bells ringing. And the sound of it told me what kind of Fey she was, which only made my stomach clench harder. Gabriel was in more than one kind of danger. There was a pad of paper next to the phone on the wall. I pointed at it, and Aurieli got up soundlessly and brought it back to me.
So you figured out who we have, the Fey woman said. Did his mommy call you? He's awfully sweet-looking, don't you think?
There was a wistfulness in her voice.
If this were a different age, I would keep him for my own.
I waited for the diatribe about how it was different in the old days. I've heard a lot of variations on that over the years. But there was only silence. I wrote, Fairy Queen travels with 5 to 20 fairy followers, used to capture humans to use as servants, lovers. Takes them to her own realm, sort of like Underhill, but different. Enchantment. Humans perceive time passing oddly. Rip Van Winkle, 100 years, or Thomas the Rhymer, 7 days became 7 years. I underlined Thomas the Rhymer's name because it was history, and Rip was a story by Irving that might or might not have been based on various legends, including Thomas's. Her laughter like tinkling of silver bells, also some sort of mesmerizing spells, robs victims of free will, might have the same effect on her Fae followers too. Rule-bound more than most Fae, but powerful within those rules. That book had taught me a lot more about the Fae than I'd known before. I hoped something would help us find Gabriel before the Fairy Queen decided to keep him.
"You are patient," she said. "That doesn't match what I've heard of you."
"Not so patient," I told her. "I don't think I'll play your game by myself. I think the Grey Lords might as well take care of my problems for me." They wouldn't, of course, and I wasn't so stupid as to invite them in. But I wanted to hear what her reaction would be to it. She laughed again.
"You do that. You just do that, Mercedes Thompson. And if they figure out what you have, or have any inkling that you might know what it is, they will kill you, werewolves or no. They'd kill you to get it, too. And trust me, it is easier to kill you, human, than it is to bother looking for it wherever you have it stashed."
I didn't doubt that she was telling the truth about the Grey Lords. Fae always tell the truth. They usually respond to taunts, too, which is why I added a smug tone to my voice as I said, "Most especially because you don't know what it is either."
"The Silver Born," she said.
She wasn't looking for the book. I had no idea what the Silver Born was, but the book was made of leather and embossed with gold. There wasn't anything silver about it. I had nothing to bargain with for Gabriel. So we'd have to find them and take him back in such a way that she never bothered us again. A lot of fairy tales ended, and the evil fairy never bothered them from that day until this. "You don't know what it looks like," I said confidently. "You think I have it because Finn is dead, and it didn't reveal itself to his killers as it would have if he were in possession of it." I told her as if I knew it to be fact.
"Do you have it?" she asked. "Maybe he did give it to someone else. Though, if you don't have it, I shall take this beautiful young man as consolation and continue looking for it."
I bit my lip. Finn was dead. "I have something of Finn's," I said with obvious caution. In the morning, I'd feel bad about the man who'd stuck his neck out to help me in defiance of the Grey Lords, who loved books and old things, and who'd had a grandmother who'd called him and worried about him. As things were, I needed to keep my wits. I was tired, and Adam's pain and fatigue were starting to trickle through me as our bond chose this inconvenient time to begin to mend itself.
"You will not tell the wolves," she said. "That is the first step. I will know if you break your word. Then I will take the boy and redouble my efforts to see you dead."
I glanced at the wolves around the table. "You didn't seem so anxious to kill me that you would risk my mate's ire yesterday morning," she hissed.
"When I have that which is silver-born, I shall have no need to fear. Not wolves, not Grey Lords. The only thing that saves you at this moment is that it might take some time after you die for it to reveal itself. If you make this too difficult for me, I will risk it."
"What did you want me to do?" I asked her.
"Tell me you won't tell any of the werewolves about me, about what you have, and that Gabriel is in any kind of distress or danger."
"Okay," I said reluctantly. "I won't tell any of the wolves about you, about the thing I have that was Finn's, or about Gabriel's current danger."
"You will not tell any of the Fae, not the Grey Lords, not the old Fae who was at your place of work this morning."
I looked at Daryl, and he nodded grimly. He'd tell Z for me. "I will not tell any Fae I know about you, about the thing I have that was Finn's, or about Gabriel's current danger."
"I can't force you to adhere to that agreement," she told me. "That magic is no longer mine, but I will know the instant you break your word, and our deal will be off. This young and beautiful man will be mine, and you will die.
Jessie's cold hand gripped mine. She and Gabriel had been sort of dating for a while. Sort of, because he was concentrating on school, since he needed scholarships for college. All right, I told the Fae.
Second, you will bring this thing to the bookstore and give it to my Knight of the Water.
Fishy boy, I thought. Though Knight of the Water didn't ring any bells. Maybe it was a title rather than a type of Fae. Nope, I'm not bringing it to the bookstore to your knight. One of her people could kill us all and leave her not forsworn. We needed to deal only with her.
You will
not trust you unless it is a full exchange. You bring Gabriel, and I get him safe and unharmed in exchange for this thing I will bring you.
I cannot bring you Gabriel unharmed,
she said, sounding amused. Mary Jo gave a very soft, rumbling growl, and I poked her to stop it. Maybe the Fae wasn't paying attention. She'd heard the earlier sound Jessie had made. But, as Bran liked to tell me, you can have the best senses in the world, but if you forget to use them, they can do you no good. No more harm than now, I said. Himself, in his own mind, his body no more bruised than it is at this instant.
That I can manage, she said, still sounding amused.
I would consider death as further damage. She laughed. The sound was beginning to get on my nerves.
So distrustful, Mercedes. Don't you read your fairy tales? It is the humans who betray their bargains. Get a good night's sleep.
Whoops, too late. Rest, then.
I'll call you at this number sometime tomorrow when I have a chance to organize a safe meeting place.
I racked my brain because she was too happy, like she knew something we didn't. Gabriel is the only human you have, I said, suddenly worried that she had more hostages. She laughed again.
You don't really think I'll answer that, do you?
And she hung up. Does anyone know what area code 333 belongs to? I asked.
There isn't one, said Ben. No 333, no 666. Phone company doesn't officially believe in numerology, but they have a lot of customers who do. You want me to call Z right now?
Rumbled Daryl.
Or does he get grumpy when you wake him up?
I looked at him. I can't answer your first question, and Z is almost always grumpy. Don't let it bother you.
I'll call him, said Aurieli.
Wait before... I hesitated to say anything about her calling Z, not knowing just how far I could go without triggering the Fae's spell. But Aurieli understood and sat back down.
Did anyone hear anything that might pinpoint where she was calling from? Asked Jessie, who watched several forensic police procedural TV shows regularly.
No trains, Mary Jo said dryly.
She pushed the table so she wasn't pinned anymore.
No water noises, no highway or car sounds, no airplanes, no distinctive church chimes, no dolphins playing in the background.
Which eliminates a lot of places, said Aurieli. I'm pretty sure it was indoors. I heard a hum that might have been a fluorescent light fixture.
I heard echoes like she was in a room with hard sides, said Daryl. Not a huge room, though. It didn't sound hollow.
When, I couldn't say, she hit him, because I'd promised not to talk about the Fairy Queen or Gabriel's danger to the werewolves. When Mary Jo heard something, there was a slight scuffing sound, I said, like a chair sliding on cement. I closed my eyes and thought about the feel of the background sounds.
The lack of outdoor noises might mean that she was in a basement instead of just indoors, said Daryl. If she's not from around here, she'd need to acquire someplace secure, not a hotel. Rentals are hard to find in the area right now. One of my co-workers was complaining about it. If Finn is dead, maybe the Fae is using his house.
He lived in an apartment, one of the newer ones in West Pasco, and he has nosy neighbors. I got up and got a dishcloth and wet it down so I could clean up the cocoa.
The bookstore, then, said Aurieli.
She took the cloth and tossed it to Mary Jo.
Your mess. You clean it up.
Mary Jo's shoulders were tight, but she started to clean up without protest. Sam and I were in the bookstore's basement tonight, I said. But the lighting there is incandescent, no buzzing. Beyond that, the sound was wrong. There were a lot of books down there, so it wasn't as echoey. The room in the phone call sounded emptier.
You were at the bookstore? Did you catch a scent?
Ben had been dozing, I thought. Even after he spoke, his eyes were closed. The stress of his wounds and the full belly from Warren's mysterious ice chest of roasts would work like a narcotic. "Do you need to go downstairs and sleep?" I asked.
"No, I'm fine. Did you find out anything?"
"We picked up Vincent and four other Fae who had been in there. One of them, some kind of forest Fae, came back, and Sam killed it. There was another forest Fae, a female we didn't meet. She was the same kind as the one Sam killed, I'm pretty sure of it. And then there was one who smelled of swamps and wet things, who hopefully is her knight of the water. The fewer allies she has, the happier I am. I met the fourth, who left traces in the bookstore earlier today. I guess that's yesterday now. She looked like a happy grandmother type. I couldn't tell what she was."
"Was it her?" asked Ben, and nodded at the phone.
"I can't answer that," I told him.
"But you can answer me," said Jessie. "Was the old woman the one who took Gabriel?"
"I don't know," I said. I closed my eyes and thought about what had happened and when. "No, she was looking through Finn's records, trying to find out who Finn gave something to. The bad guys had already tried to kill me once. If you didn't pick up on it, the incident at my garage yesterday morning was aimed at me. They knew where they were looking." Maybe if I could have talked to her, we'd know more about what it was that the Fairy Queen wanted.
"She's not smart, this Fairy Queen," said Ben. "If she were, she'd have known that you weren't human."
"I don't exactly advertise," I told him. "And other than my connection to Adam and the Maroc, I'm not important. There's no reason that she should know, especially since she's been producing shows in California."
"She makes assumptions,"
Daryl said.
"Most people look at you, Mercy, and wonder if you are Fae or Wolf, and just hiding it, because you're mated to a Wolf and working with a Fae."
He stopped and raised a speculative eyebrow.
"Or she thinks you are one or the other and might react and tell her which one if she kept taunting you with being human."
"That sounds about right," I said.
"Why not just give them whatever she wants and get Gabriel back?" Mary Jo said. "It's not yours, and it sounds like the rightful owner is dead anyway."
Ben snorted.
"You aren't usually this dumb. You want to hand a woman like this Fairy Queen an object of power that she believes can protect her from us?"
Daryl tilted his head and looked at Mary Jo. She flushed and dropped her gaze.
"Don't think I don't remember that you disobeyed Adam,"
he said.
"You have no standing here, and you will not leave this house until your punishment."
He waited, then answered her question.
"Ben's right. Besides, you really think she's going to let anyone live who knows what she has? I don't know a damn thing about what she wants. If the Grey Lords are willing to kill Mercy just because she knows about it, Mercy, who has their favor and is beloved by our Alpha, don't you think they'd kill one of those under their power who has no such protections? If I can figure that out from one phone conversation, this Daphne, she knows it too. She has no intention of letting anyone go. She'd make the exchange, then kill both Mercy and the boy."
"Or keep the boy and kill Mercy,"
added Jessie, who had her dad's clear eye for strategy.
"Gabriel would rather be dead."
She was still a teenager with a streak of drama, though. I wasn't so sure Gabriel would rather be dead than serve the Fairy Queen. From all accounts, it was fairly pleasant from the victim's side, because they had no willpower to object. I'd rather be dead. Maybe she was right.
"Mercy,"
grumbled Daryl.
"She was right about one thing. You need some sleep. Go to bed."
His voice softened.
"You too, Jessie. We can all help your boy better on a full night's sleep."
He was right. I was so tired I could hardly keep my eyes open. I yawned and hooked my arm through Jessie's.
"Okay."
After dropping Jessie off at her room, I opened the door to Adam's as quietly as I could. Someone had stripped the comforter and thrown it on the floor. Adam was sprawled naked on top of the sheet, and he looked horrible. A mass of dark red scabs covered most of his extremities, as well as here and there on the rest of his body. Warren had taken off his boots and was lying on the near side of the bed on his side, facing the doorway. Sam was curled up between them at the foot of the bed. I'd worried a little about leaving him with a wounded alpha, but apparently he was still behaving atypically for an uncontrolled werewolf. While I closed the door, he rolled flat on his side and half looked at me. He wiggled a bit and let out a satisfied oof as he pushed Warren's feet over a few inches. I noticed that he didn't touch Adam. Warren was awake, even if he looked like he was deeply asleep. I crawled over him, and the corners of his mouth tipped up. I settled in between him and Adam, curling my legs up so I didn't kick Sam. I tried not to touch Adam, but he rolled over and threw an arm over my hip. It felt warm and safe and good, and probably hurt him. His eyes opened a slit, then closed. I lay there a while in simple appreciation that he'd survived the fire. The door opened just as I was drifting off to sleep.
"Is there room for one more?"
asked Ben. I lifted up my head to see him standing in the doorway in a pair of baggy sweats. His hair was ruffled on one side, as if he'd been lying down before he came up.
"If not, I can go."
"Come on in,"
rumbled Warren.
"I'll go take the upstairs guest room."
Warren rolled off the bed, and Ben crawled on. He put one foot on mine, then let out a sigh and collapsed like a puppy who'd been playing for too long. Pack is for comfort when you hurt, I thought, putting my head back down. And for the first time in a long time, maybe the first time ever, I appreciated being a part of one. I woke up because the top of my head was too warm. The sensation was vaguely familiar, so I started to go back to sleep when sharp, pokey things started digging into my scalp. And then I remembered why there shouldn't be a cat sleeping on my head. I sat up and stared into the cool gaze of the slightly singed calico Manx, who expressed her irritation with my abrupt change of position with an irritated meow. She smelled of smoke, and there was a raw spot on the top of her back, but otherwise she seemed to be fine. Adam didn't move, but Ben rolled over and opened his eyes. "Hey, cat," I said, tearing up, as she adjusted to my new position and maneuvered herself so she was within easy petting distance of both Ben and me. "I thought you were toast." She pushed her head under my hand and rolled so my hand slid through her coat. Ben started to reach out, but stopped as soon as he moved his fingers. They looked better than they had before, though they still looked like something that might appear in a horror movie.
"I didn't realize you didn't know," Ben said, his voice still rough. "I should have told you. Adam went to your room. I went to Sam's and found her under the bed."
I wiped my eyes and nose on my shoulder, both hands being occupied with cat and covered with cat hair anyway. Then I leaned forward and kissed Ben's nose. "Thanks," I said. "I'd have missed her a lot."
"Yeah."
He stretched out on his back, hands carefully laid across his belly.
"We'd have missed her, too. Only cat I've ever seen who tolerates werewolves."
He sounded oddly vulnerable. I don't think he was used to being the hero.
"Don't feel too flattered,"
said Adam dryly.
"Medea likes vampires, too."
"Adam," I said. But he was asleep again, and I could feel him in my head, just as he should be. Chapter 10. I woke up, and my first thought was surprise that I was so sore. Then I remembered the huge fae who'd knocked me silly. In the wake of my home burning down and Adam getting hurt, the encounter with the fae in the bookstore had become incidental. There was a goose-egg-sized knot on the back of my head. Nothing wanted to move very much, and my ankles, both of them, ached. Sam was snoring, something he actually didn't do very often. He was stretched out across my feet, which couldn't have been very comfortable for him, though he seemed happy enough. He must have felt my attention, because he rolled onto his back and stretched, an instant of half-wakefulness that ended with him going back to snoring. Adam was still sleeping like the dead, as he had for most of the night, except when he woke up coughing blood tinged gray with smoke particles. Sometime during the night, he'd rolled away from me, and now he slept on his side. I ran a hand over his shoulder blade, and he moved into my touch without waking up. "Hey," I told him, "I love you." He didn't answer, but I didn't need one. I knew how he felt. Only after I rolled painfully off the edge of the bed did it occur to me that Ben was missing. A glance out the window told me it was still morning. Not early, but not late enough to make me feel like a slug-a-bed either. I limped stiffly to the bathroom, One hot shower later, I could move again. And even if my clothes were on their second day and smelled of blood and smoke and all, I felt ready to face the morning. After a little dithering, I put my shoulder holster back on. I didn't feel any urgent need to go armed, but I didn't have anywhere to put the SIG out of harm's way either. Adam probably had a gun safe around somewhere, but I didn't know where it was. So I wore the shoulder harness under my T-shirt, which was loose enough to conceal it. I'd have a hard time drawing the gun, but that shouldn't matter. It was loaded with lead bullets, and the house was full of werewolves. If I had to draw the gun, I was probably dead anyway. On that cheery thought, I left the bedroom and shut the door quietly behind me. The lovely smell of sausage and butter pulled me into the kitchen. Daryl was cooking. Aurelie grinned at my expression.
"Sundays," she said with satisfaction. "He cooks and I wash dishes. Mostly we end up here at Pac Central, and when Daryl cooks, everyone stops by. It's a pretty big job."
The way werewolves eat, it certainly was. A big job that was one of those little things that pulled a pack together. Sunday breakfasts at Adam's house. "If you're doing dishes while he cooks, does he do the dishes when you cook?" I asked.
"Nope,"
Daryl said, serving each of us a plate of sausage, eggs, hash browns, and French toast with a snap that looked awfully professional, and returned to the stove.
"Not that enlightened."
She smiled at his back.
"He vacuums, though."
And Daryl made an irritated noise. "Have you seen Ben?" I asked. Then said involuntarily, "This is really good." The French toast was spiked with real vanilla, cinnamon, and a host of other things, including authentic bittersweet maple syrup.
"Mmm,"
Aurelie nodded, taking a bite of her hash browns.
"He cooked his way through grad school."
"Made good money at it, too,"
Daryl agreed.
"Ben's been down, eaten breakfast, and gone. He'll be back soon. I called Z last night."
I set down my fork. "What did he say?"
"Nothing, if you're gonna let my good food go cold."
I took a hasty bite, and he went back to cooking and talking.
"I played last night's ransom call back to him, and he picked me clean of everything you told us. Then he said he'd see what he could do. He called an hour or so ago and told me to tell you he'd be over here as soon as he could. It might be a couple of hours, though, so stall the villainess if she wants you to move before he gets here."
"How did he sound?"
"Grumpy. Coffee or orange juice?"
"Water is fine." His eyebrows went up. "Uh-oh," Aurelie said, but she was smiling. Daryl was not.
"Are you implying that my coffee is not the best in four counties, or my fresh-squeezed orange juice is less than perfect?"
Jesse breezed in and squealed.
"Oh my goodness, Daryl is cooking! I'd almost forgotten it was Sunday. Orange juice, please."
She glanced at me and laughed.
"Mercy doesn't do orange juice or coffee," she said, grabbing a glass out of the cupboard and filling it out of the pitcher Daryl had set out. "So sad. More orange juice for me."
She was being cute and upbeat, but there were dark circles under her eyes. She took the plate Daryl handed her and sat down next to Aurelie.
"So," she said.
Her pink hair helped her cheerful act. Hard to look sad with pink hair, even if her eyes were a little pink, too.
"How are we going to save Gabriel?"
"Have you ever noticed that everyone who knows Mercy eventually needs saving?" asked Mary Jo as she walked into the kitchen.
I was going to have to do something about Mary Jo. I took another bite of French toast and put the fork down on the plate. Sooner was probably better than later. I stood up.
"Excuse me," I said to Daryl.
To Jesse, I said, "I'm borrowing your bedroom. Any complaints?" She stared at me a moment.
"No,"
she said, her voice rising as if her answer were a question, which maybe it was. "Your stereo is pretty effective at keeping voices from being overheard by all the werewolves in this house. And from the noise coming from downstairs, there are a lot of werewolves here."
"It's Daryl's cooking,"
said Aurelie, sounding a little apologetic. "I can see why," I said. "I'd appreciate it if you would guard my plate until I come back." I looked at Mary Jo.
"You, come with me."
And without looking behind me, I led the way up the stairs to Jessie's room. I walked into Jessie's room and turned on her stereo until it was almost painfully loud. The CD wasn't something I'd have chosen to listen to, but it was loud, and that was all I was interested in. "Shut the door," I told Mary Jo. I was almost surprised she just followed me up as I'd asked. Face blank, she did as I'd requested.
Okay, now if you come over here by the window, it's almost impossible for anyone to overhear us.
All the precautions weren't really necessary. With this many people in Adam's house, no one, no matter how good their hearing was, could really listen from one room to the next. There were simply too many conversations going on. But the stereo made our privacy virtually certain.
What do you want?
She asked, not moving from the center of the room. I leaned against the wall next to the window and crossed my arms over my stomach. It felt wrong to be in this position. I've been a solitary person my whole life. Even when I lived in Aspen Creek with a Morox pack, even then I'd really been alone, a coyote among wolves. But Adam needed his pack behind him, and because of me, they weren't. If I was going to be the problem, I owed it to him to be part of the solution. So I was going to see if all those times I watched the Morox twist people in little knots would allow me to use his techniques to achieve the same results. I smiled at her. I want you to tell me what your problem with me is, right here, right now, where there is no one else to interfere.
You are the problem, Mercedes, she snapped. A scavenger coyote among wolves. You don't belong here.
Oh, come on. You can do better than that, I goaded her. You sound like you're Jesse's age, and Jesse doesn't sound like that. Her eyes veiled as she considered what I said.
All right, she said after a minute. Point to you. First problem. You let Adam rot for 2 years after he claimed you as his mate. And during that 2 years, our pack fell apart because Adam could barely keep himself calm and was nearly useless at helping anyone else keep their wolf in check.
Agreed, I said. But I have to point out in my defense that Adam never asked me if I wanted to be his mate during that time or before he declared it in front of the pack. He never asked me either before or after. I wasn't a pack member, and his declaration was to keep the rest of the wolves away, so I didn't even find out about this until well after it happened. Even then, no one told me the consequences until just a few months ago, and as soon as I figured out what was happening to the pack and to Adam because of that claim, I made a decision.
How kind of you, she snapped, her eyes brightening with temper, to become Adam's mate for the pack's sake.
Point to me, I told her calmly. The choice I made had nothing to do with the problems in the pack. All Adam needed was an answer, and no would have worked just as well to set the pack back in order. I agreed because he's Adam. Mine, whispered a voice in my head, but I was pretty sure that it was my own voice.
Second problem, she said between gritted teeth. It was your invitation to the stray that led to Adam being almost killed and Jesse kidnapped.
Nope. I shook my head. You can't lay that one on me. That was werewolf business from beginning to end. I got involved because I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. No more, no less. Point to me.
I disagree, she said.
She was standing in the classic at-ease position, I noticed, like a soldier. I wondered if it was something Adam taught them while he had them in training, because, to my knowledge, Mary Jo had never been in the military. Fine, I said, shrugging. It's a free country. You can feel as you wish.
You can't deny who nearly got our third killed when the demon came to town, you and your connection to the vampires, she said.
Her voice was cool, her heartbeat steady. Warren wasn't important to her. Ben had been right. She hadn't even called him by name because she felt the rank was more valuable than the man. Once it was known that there was a demon in town, it was inevitable that the wolves would have to go after it, I told her. And you could care less about Warren, so don't pretend you were concerned about him. That had her head up and her eyes on me. She actually looked a little worried. She had been trying to pretend that she wasn't one of the wolves that Warren bothered. Warren is worth 10 of you, I told her. He's here when he's needed, and he doesn't do his best to undermine Adam whenever his orders are inconvenient. I waved off her impending argument, because I was saving the discussions of her more recent activities until later, when I'd broken her down enough to answer my questions. Back to business. What else?
It's your fault I died, she said. Poor Alec. When he tore my jugular, he didn't know what hit him. None of us did. The vampires targeted us because of you.
The vampires had set a trap at Uncle Mike's, the local tavern where the Fae and assorted other supernatural people went to relax. They'd laid a spell that drove anything with ties to wolves, to bloodshed.
Mary Jo's bad luck that she and two other werewolves, Paul and Alec, had gone there on the wrong night. By the time Adam and I got there, Mary Jo was dead. But apparently, if you die when there is a Grey Lord present, at least when one particular Grey Lord is present, dead isn't as permanent as it might otherwise have been. "Point to you," I said, deliberately relaxing against the wall so she could see it didn't bother me in the slightest. I can't lie with my mouth, but sometimes body language does it for me. "I'd tell you that accepting the blame for the bad guys is a stupid thing to do. The proper people to blame for your almost death are the vampires, but if I hadn't been dating Adam, they wouldn't have targeted the wolves, so I suppose you could be justified in blaming me." I waited for her to look up again so I could read her face. When she looked at me, her control was back in full. There were two things that could explain her sudden dislike of me. The first one was the incident at Uncle Mike's, but she wasn't angry enough about it, which left me with the second. I'd hit her with that when it would do me more good. "But," I told her, "if I accept the blame, I'd like to point out that I'm also the reason you are still standing here. The Grey Lord healed you because she thought she owed me a favor." She sneered. "I hope to God that someone does you that kind of favor someday. It hurt. It still hurts. Some days I can't feel different body parts." I'd known about that, and it worried me, though the Fae had given her word that Mary Jo would be back to normal. I expect that she'd left out the word eventually, because Mary Jo's suffering didn't really matter to the Fae. "Next time, I'll tell her not to bother bringing you back," I promised. I tapped my foot and wondered how far I really wanted to push this. Some of it depended upon what role I wanted to take in the pack. Just then, I was channeling my inner Bran, using the techniques I'd grown up watching the Marak use, techniques that came so easily to me it made me a little uncomfortable. I don't see myself as a manipulative person. For the moment, though, I set that aside and considered the case at hand. "Figure out the results you want and do what you can to get them," was one of Bran's favorite sayings. Well then, exactly what results did I want? Part of that really depended upon how much of her recent activities were directed at me and how much at Adam. I found that I could excuse her actions against me, but I was less inclined to be forgiving about Adam. I remembered that look she'd given me when I was sitting on the floor of the hospital with Adam changing in my lap. Adam, who damn near burned to death trying to rescue me because she hadn't told him I was safe. The look that said she'd have been happier with him dead than with him on my lap. Had that been a momentary thing? Or had her anger that Adam was mine become a force driving her past the point of no return? "Mary Jo," I said pleasantly, "you and I know all of that is garbage. It is all true, or mostly, but it isn't why you are so angry with me." Her chin jerked up. "Adam is mine," I told her, "and you can't handle it. Does it bother you that I'm a coyote? That we have sort of an extreme case of an interracial, in our case maybe even cross-species, mating? Daryl is African and Chinese, and Arielle is Hispanic, and they don't seem to bother you." It wasn't that I was a coyote shifter that bothered her. I knew it. I just wondered if she knew it. It did bother some of the pack. Maybe Arielle and Daryl bothered some of them, too. If so, those pack members were smart enough to keep it to themselves. Mary Jo tightened her lips, but didn't say anything. "How long have you wanted him?" I asked her. "You had all these years since Jesse's mother left." Bran's methods sucked. I watched her eyes darken with pain and wanted to kick myself. But she'd been at least partially responsible for Adam's wounds, and I agreed with Warren about fire after watching Samuel scrub dead flesh from live. Mary Jo had been stupid. I was betting she hadn't hurt Adam on purpose, but I had to know. I observed the anger that followed pain rise in her face and just watched her.
"You are nothing," she spit. "I'm nothing, too. That's how I know. Adam deserves the best. A wolf, strong and beautiful. A woman who is
more," I suggested. "Smart, well-bred."
"Not a half-breed coyote," she snapped.
Her wolf was in her eyes, and her voice was raw.
"Not a stupid mechanic or a freaking fireman. There isn't even a proper word for what I am. Fireman."
He needs someone soft, someone feminine.
He deserves so much, I said slowly. I had her, even though it made me sick. Coyotes aren't cats. We don't play with our prey. I think he deserves a pack who has his back.
I have his back, she said.
I couldn't see her hands. Through all this, she'd held to parade rest, and her hands were hidden behind her back. From the flex of her biceps, I would bet that they were clenched in fists, and her voice wasn't as hard and certain as she meant it to be. But her words told me what I'd been watching for, told me that she hadn't wanted him dead. That made the rest of this both harder and easier. Harder, because she was going to be hurting even more before this was over. Easier, because she would survive it. You have his back, do you? I kept my voice soft, my body relaxed. Funny, I could have sworn that you just set him up to be killed.
I got him out, she said. I ran in after him with Daryl and pulled him out.
Not soon enough, Mary Jo, I said. He could have easily died in there. I had to take a breath so I could maintain my relaxed posture. He could have died. But I had to keep up the momentum, make her listen to me, make her listen to herself. Who was it that was out there with you? I asked coolly. Ben says whoever it was, he has to be more dominant than you. It wasn't Warren or Daryl. Ben would have noticed if Daryl hadn't been at the meeting. He'd have said something to me. Because if it was Daryl who was running the show, it would have been too dangerous to hold his tongue. The same was true of Aurelie. How does the pack run from there? I watched her sweat. Ben was right that it was someone higher up. She was expecting me to name him soon, so not too far down the pack hierarchy. Aurelie. It wasn't her either, was it? She likes Adam. She'd never send him into a burning building to rescue someone who wasn't there. She stiffened at the dig. Then there is Paul. That got her. Wasn't that interesting? But I knew better. It wasn't him, though. Adam doesn't trust Paul at his back. He'd have kept him right here through the whole pack meeting. Paul had been my pick for the jerk who'd influenced me at the bowling alley before I'd understood how angry Mary Jo was. He'd probably been Adam's pick, too. Paul was still angry about losing a fight to Warren, and he'd put the blame on Adam for that. Like Ben, Paul was a bitter and difficult person who didn't like many people. Mary Jo was one he did like. Her and her boyfriend, Henry. I watched her face closely. She was worried, I'd guess. Not Paul, then who? Further down the ranks, things could get murky to an outsider, as I had been, and really still was. I ran the wolves I knew well through my head, then stopped. Henry? He was a nice guy. Smart and quick. A banker, I thought, but I wasn't sure. Something with finances. He would never... Never was an awfully strong word. I wondered how Henry felt about Mary Jo's crush on Adam. Henry, I said experimentally, and watched her face whiten. Maybe she didn't know how much she was telling me without opening her mouth at all. Henry was out with you last night. Henry told you to leave the Fae alone when they set my house on fire. Jesse's door opened, and Adam came in and shut it gently behind him. He was obviously stiff, and from the set of his jaw and the tightness of the skin around his eyes, he was in pain as well. If I could see it, he was hurting a lot more than he showed. And the Alpha didn't show weakness if he could help it. He was dressed only in a pair of gi bottoms that ended mid-calf, leaving the weepy wounds on his feet clearly visible. Oh, there were other bits in rough shape, but next to his feet, nothing looked all that bad.
I heard your voice,
he told me, pulling my eyes away from his feet and up to his face.
So I pressed my ear to the door, and even with the noise my daughter calls music blaring, I overheard what you said, Mercy.
He looked at Mary Jo, who had turned around to face him and lost her formal parade rest stance. She just stood there, looking vulnerable. Had it been Samuel standing there, I'd have worried that he would be too soft on her. But Adam didn't really see women as the weaker sex, and he knew how to organize and how to recognize organization when he saw it. His unreadable face was focused on Mary Jo.
So Henry was there when the Fae set Mercy's house on fire. and here I thought you were out there alone. Because I knew Henry was in the house when I had plainly told him to back you up last night. Doubtless if I asked him, he'd tell me that he thought I only meant for him to be there while the meeting was going on, or he'd come up with some other explanation.
Henry was the one to tell you my house was on fire, wasn't he? I said. Like Adam, I was watching Mary Jo. I couldn't see her face, but her shoulders tightened. A friend of mine from college, a drama major, told me that the shoulders are the most expressive part of the body. I had to agree with him. She was almost to the point of seeing the big picture, because she expected Adam to say yes.
I see you followed this to its logical conclusion, Mercy, he told me, but his eyes were on Mary Jo. I wonder if she's seen it yet, or if she's part of it.
Henry ran in and got you out to the trailer before anyone else came out of the house?
Mary Jo's voice was stark, but she wasn't arguing.
That's right,
Adam agreed,
more or less. He wandered into the kitchen. Before I could ask him why he wasn't out watching Mercy, he looked out the window and said, "What's that? Is that a fire? My God, the house is on fire."
He knew, Mary Jo said uncertainly. He saw them start it. He wouldn't let me confront them because he was afraid I'd get hurt. He said Mercy and Sam were gone. What was the harm if the upstart coyote's house went up in flames? She deserved a little hurt because of all the pain she'd caused.
Mary Jo looked at Adam.
He meant to me. He was really angry about how the vampires had attacked us, how I was hurt because they were trying to get to Mercy. He wanted to get back at Mercy.
He could care less about me, I told her. His girlfriend didn't like me better than she liked him. Henry was interested in Adam. He saw an opportunity to get back at Adam, and he jumped at it. I looked at Adam.
The next time you leap into a burning building after me, you'd better make damn sure I'm in there. And where are your shoes, damn it?
I looked at his feet again.
You're leaking nasty burn ooze on the carpet.
He smiled.
I love you too, sweetheart. And thanks to the time you bled all over it, I now know a place that can clean almost anything off the carpet.
He wanted Adam hurt, I told Mary Jo. Because if he's hurt, then he's vulnerable. An alpha can be challenged at any time. Since Adam is hurt, usually he could put it off without anyone complaining, especially since the Maroc doesn't allow fights for an alpha position without his consent. But the pack is... I looked at Adam. Sorry, I know it's my fault, but the pack is broken. Adam can't put this off. Not when the pack is in this much turmoil. If he does, he's liable to have worse than a formal fight on his hands. He'll have a rebellion.
See, I grew up in a werewolf pack. I know the dangers. Not even fear of the Maroc can completely control the nature of the pack. That's why an alpha will do anything in his power to hide his weakness in front of the pack.
Henry challenged you?
Mary Jo's voice was shocked.
The Maroc will kill him if you don't manage it first.
Almost right,
said Adam.
Paul is actually the one who challenged me. Climbed in the window of the bedroom about 4 minutes ago and challenged me in front of Ben, Alec, and Henry. Henry, having volunteered to drive Ben to pick up some clothes for Mercy, because Ben's hands are still too sore for him to drive easily, and suggested Alec tag along.
He paused and said heavily,
"Henry is helpful like that."
Mary Jo nodded.
"And Alec is known as a neutral party. Not one of your biggest fans, but not one of the hotheads either."
Adam continued in a gentler voice.
They must have had some signal so that he and Paul appeared in my bedroom at virtually the same moment when neither Warren nor Daryl was there to interfere. Ben and Henry witnessed the challenge. Henry was appalled that Paul would challenge me when I was hurt.
They set you up, said Mary Jo numbly. They used me to set you up.
That's what I was trying to tell you, I said. Then added a question casually.
Was it just you and Henry at the bowling alley, or did Paul help, too?
She nodded, not even noticing all the assumptions I'd made, because she was too distracted by the realization that things might not have been as she'd thought they were.
Paul, Henry, and I. Paul suggested it to me. Can't have a coyote second in rank in a respectable pack.
Mary Jo looked at Adam.
He said she wasn't good enough for you, and I agreed. Henry was pretty reluctant. I had to talk him into it. He set me up, didn't he? Both of them set me up.
I felt sorry for her. But I'd felt more sorry for her before I'd found out that the wolf who challenged Adam was Paul. Henry was a good fighter,
I'd seen him play fight a time or two, but he wasn't a tithe on Paul. Paul. Normally, I wouldn't worry about Paul taking Adam either. But normally, Adam's feet weren't oozing goo on the carpet, and his hands weren't swollen and raw. That was why I wasn't sorry enough for Mary Jo that I'd let her escape blame by pointing her finger at the other two. "The bowling alley was you," I said. "Oh, Paul wouldn't cry if Adam and I broke up. But he wants to get rid of Adam more than he wants to get rid of me. Henry, maybe that was the straw that broke the camel's back for Henry. You'd know better than I. Was that the first time he realized how much you wanted Adam?" Adam jerked his head toward me. I guess he hadn't noticed how Mary Jo felt. "Paul," began Mary Jo. Then she stopped, closed her eyes and shook her head. "Not Paul." She gave Adam a wry smile. "Paul is tough, and he's not stupid, but he's not a planner. He'd never have figured out how to force you to accept a challenge before you were ready. She's right. It's Henry. What can I do?"
"Not a darn thing," he said. "Just be smarter next time."
"When's the fight?" I asked, trying to be cool. Trying to be a good coyote who lets her mate go out and fight a duel to the death when it hurts him to walk. I had to do it, because sobbing and fussing wouldn't change anything except make his job harder. If he refused the challenge, Paul would be alpha. And if I knew Paul, his first act would be to kill Adam. Henry was hoping so anyway. And the reason it was Paul who challenged and not Henry was because as soon as the Maroc heard about this, Paul was a dead man. And that would leave Daryl in charge of the pack with Warren as his second. The pack would not tolerate having a gay man in the second position because if something happened to Daryl, Warren would run the pack. So Warren would be killed or be moved by Bran, leaving Henry as the second in the pack. Of course, Adam would have to lose to Paul for that to happen. I felt sick. Adam looked at Jesse's clock, which read 9:15.
15 minutes from now, in the dojo, he said. "Would you go down and let Daryl and Warren know they'll be wanted for witnesses? I think I'll go lie down for another 10 minutes.
He was in the hallway when he said,
"If I survive, Mary Jo, we'll have to come up with a suitable reparation for the bowling alley. You ruined a very promising evening, and I won't forget about it."
"Your food is cold,"
growled Daryl as I entered the kitchen.
"I hope your business was important."
Jesse was still there drying while Arielle washed. There was no saving this, not if Paul specified the fight be here. No chance of talking Jesse into waiting this one out somewhere safe. She was too much her father's daughter. "Paul's challenged Adam," I told them. 15 minutes from now in the dojo in the garage." Daryl whirled around with a growl, and Arielle stepped between him and Jesse, though I don't think Jesse realized it, because she was staring at me.
"How did he get to Adam?" said Arielle. "Who was supposed to be watching him?"
"Me," I said after a stunned moment. "I guess that would be me."
"No," said Arielle. "That would have been Samuel. Ben said he left Adam with Samuel and you."
"Samuel's not pack,"
growled Daryl, eyes light gold in the darkness of his face. Sam wasn't Samuel, I thought. In the normal course of things, Samuel would have kept that challenge from happening. I wondered if Paul or Henry had realized that. Probably not. "My fault," I said.
"No."
I'd left Mary Jo in Jesse's room, but she must have followed me down. "Not your fault," Mary Jo said. "Maybe Warren or Daryl could have stopped Paul, but Henry was very careful to make sure they weren't there." She gave me an inscrutable look that would have done credit to Daryl. Inscrutable, but not overtly hostile. "They wouldn't have thought Samuel would interfere. They think of him as a lone wolf, not as Adam's friend." The look, I realized, was to let me know that she wouldn't tell them about Samuel unless I did.
"Henry?"
Daryl was shocked into dropping his anger.
"Henry?"
Mary Jo lifted her chin.
"He planned it."
She looked at me, then away.
"He wants Adam dead and is using Paul, used me too, in order to accomplish it."
"Is that what they told you?"
Henry himself came into the kitchen. He was a compact man, a little taller than me, with a quick smile and hazel eyes that could look either gray or gold, rather than the more usual brown and green. He wore his hair in a conservative cut,
and almost certainly shaved with a regular razor rather than an electric, because an electric never produces quite